Welcome to the Preconception Podcast, the only podcast dedicated exclusively to guiding women through the preconception period. Our mission is to make sure you have the information you need in order to have the healthiest pregnancy possible, whether that happens next month or next year. The decisions you make today can significantly impact the health of you and your future children for years to come. So each week on our podcast, we'll discuss one piece of the preconception puzzle. This way, you can enter pregnancy empowered, informed, and in the best health possible. Join us on your journey and have today be the day you start planning your perfect pregnancy. Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Preconception Podcast. Today, we have a guest speaker, Amy Michaels-Koberling, who is a cosmetic dermatology PA based in Miami, Florida, speaking with us today. And we're so excited to have her because skincare in the preconception period is something that comes up a lot, but that might not be on the on your radar when you're planning a pregnancy. So today we're going to talk about some of the things that you can do in the preconception period to help your skin and also some of the things that you should avoid. So thank you for joining us, Amy.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited.
Me too. And thank you again for being willing to speak with us about this. For anyone who is not familiar with Amy, she is known as the Skinthusiast on Instagram and shares some really excellent information both there and on her website about skincare and beauty and wellness. And I feel like she is really a wealth of information. And obviously, I'm partial to her because she's a PA like myself.
Yes, I am. Proud to be a PA.
Proud to be a PA. So before we really get started on the skincare conversation, can you just tell us a little bit about your background and how you became interested in dermatology?
Sure. So I am originally from Ohio. That's where I was born and raised. And growing up, you know, in a small-ish town, I really always had a love for aesthetically pleasing things. So, you know, I was reading all the teen fashion magazines growing up, cutting out photos, you know, making mood boards and things like that. And that's always been of interest to me. And to be honest, when I was young, I thought maybe I would go into something like journalism or fashion. But as I got older and made my way through high school and then eventually college, I really learned that I had a love for the sciences. So I decided to pursue a career in medicine. And it wasn't long before I realized that, you know, my love of skincare and all things beauty could really turn into a career in dermatology. So I did my elective rotation in PA school with a dermatologist who was kind of half general, half cosmetic. And then after I graduated PA school, I actually worked in the ICU for 2 years and with the intention of eventually going and transitioning into dermatology. But I really wanted to kind of cement some of that basic medical knowledge first. As you know, PA school is kind of hard and fast, so it's really quick and you learn a lot. So when I graduated, I really wanted to take some time and make sure that my general medicine skills were kind of on point before I decided to specialize. And I had initially planned on spending more time in the ICU, but I got an amazing offer that I couldn't turn down and I ended up taking it.
That's awesome. And you've been in dermatology ever since then.
Yep, exactly.
That's excellent. And for anyone who's not familiar with the PA profession, that's one of the great things about being a PA is that you can transition between different specialties, in contrast to a physician who is a little bit more difficult to transition between specialties because they have mandated residencies that they have to go through. So just a tidbit about the PA profession there.
Yeah, one of the favorite parts about it, for sure.
Absolutely. Okay, so let's start by talking about skin cancer prevention. So I feel like, you know, maybe back when we were younger even, skin cancer prevention was not as commonly talked about. Like, I remember that we used to wear sunscreen when we were younger, but, you know, growing up, I also remember that tanning beds were a big thing and getting a good tan when you were a teenager and in college was an important priority for a lot of women, at least where I grew up. And so now, however, I think that skin cancer prevention and just preventing damage to your skin from the sun is something that is more widely known. But I do find that not everyone is familiar with whether or not they should get skin checks, and if so, when that should happen. So I'm just curious, do you recommend skin checks for your patients?
Yes, absolutely. And as you mentioned, I'm a primarily cosmetic dermatology PA. So while I deal with a lot of acne and melasma, eczema, things like that, I don't do yearly skin checks with my patients. So that's something I refer them to a general dermatologist for. But absolutely, everybody should be having a skin check at least once a year, if not more, depending on your personal or family history. So as you mentioned, it's so, so important. And I was in the camp of people who went to tanning beds and things like that. And I'm just so mad at myself now. So if I can impart any knowledge or convince anyone to not sunbake, not lay out in the sun without sunscreen, it's so, so important because prevention is really key. But yes, I do recommend yearly skin checks for my patients.
That's great to know. And I think that that's something that's really important to hear because in my experience, a lot of women don't necessarily get that information or that recommendation from their primary care providers or their OBGYNs. I know when I worked in OBGYN clinically, I always brought that up at well woman exams, but a lot of times it was the first time that my patients had ever really heard about having a skin check with a dermatologist or someone who was skilled in that. And so as it relates to the preconception period, I would just like to say to our listeners that this is one of those things that you can kind of add to your preconception checklist. One of the things that we advocate for here at preconception is that you do kind of all of these screening behaviors in that preconception period before you get pregnant, because in some cases, you know, certain procedures and whatnot can be a little bit more difficult to do while pregnant or maybe contraindicated. And on top of that, when you're pregnant, you just have so much going on that if you can take the load of some of these, you know, annual screens off, I think that it can be really helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. And not only that, but, you know, when you're pregnant, your body is changing and that your skin is changing too. So moles are going to appear larger than they did beforehand. And so it's a really good idea to have a baseline so that you've hopefully seen someone who has done a full body exam and made notes on any moles that were suspicious so that if and when something comes up while you're pregnant, they can look back and compare, because most dermatologists really don't want to remove a mole during pregnancy unless they absolutely have to. While it's a super safe procedure, it's still, as you know, in pregnancy, less is more. So it's a good idea to get all of those boxes checked beforehand. And there's also the concern of infection. When you're pregnant, no one wants to produce a wound that could then potentially become infected. So all of those things are all reasons why you should do this beforehand.
That's an excellent point. And very timely, because I just got my annual skin check this week.
Oh, great.
So this is a reminder to everyone else, if you have not scheduled yours or if you have not had one previously, now is the time to do that.
Absolutely.
All right. So the idea behind preconception planning is to essentially start using pregnancy safe ingredients and products before conception so that when you do become pregnant, you are not exposing in early pregnancy the fetus to any toxic chemicals. And so today I'd like to start by talking about some of the products and procedures commonly used by women for skincare and whether or not these should be continued during the preconception period and during pregnancy. And if not, what alternatives might exist that are preconception and pregnancy friendly. So let's start off with sunscreen. We just spoke about how important it is to apply sunscreen when you're going out in the sun and to avoid the sun when possible. And so I feel like this is pretty much recommended to everyone nowadays, again, both for skin cancer prevention and for anti-aging purposes. Are there any specific ingredients that women should look out for in sunscreen when they're planning a pregnancy or when they are pregnant?
Yes. So really, out of an abundance of caution, we will generally recommend that pregnant women stick to a mineral or physical sunscreen. And those are sunscreens that contain the active ingredients zinc oxide and titanium dioxide. So most of the sunscreens that you see on the drugstore shelves, not all, but most are chemical sunscreens. And there is a lot of fear around these sunscreens, which not all of it is warranted. Just earlier this year, a study came out showing that there are levels found in the blood of people who are using these chemical sunscreens of the chemicals. So we need more research, basically. We're not totally sure if these chemicals have really any effect on us. We know that they are absorbed, but many things are absorbed. So it doesn't necessarily mean that they're causing harm to our bodies. However, in the pregnancy period, of course, we're talking about the most precious thing in human life. So we are always super, super cautious during this period. So you're going to want to stick to mineral sunscreens.
That's a really great point. And one of the things that we talk about here is toxic like exposures as far as toxic burden. And so one of the things that's important to remember is that, as you mentioned, we don't always have really great data on certain products and whether or not, you know, certain chemicals that are present are harmful or not. But as you mentioned, we do in some cases have alternatives that we know may be more safe. And so I think that when those alternatives exist, for instance, as it relates to sunscreen, when you can use mineral versus chemical sunscreen, I think that's one of those choices that is a pretty easy switch to make.
Absolutely. And that's exactly what I mean. It's just, it's not worth it if there is even the most minuscule risk that maybe we don't fully understand yet. It's just not worth it when we have great alternatives.
Absolutely. Do you have any favorite brands of mineral sunscreen that you recommend?
Oh, I have so many. A couple of my favorites that I personally use all the time are Elta MD. They have a couple great ones. They have one called Elta Physical and one called Elta Elements. Those are both mineral physical sunscreens. I also love Color Science. They also have a bronze version, which is great for darker skin tones. PCA makes a great one. Jan Marini. There are some really fantastic ones out there.
And are those the ones that you can get at a drugstore, or are those typically ones that you have to order through a dermatologist?
You don't necessarily have to order them through a dermatologist. You can order them online at, you know, any, you know, like Exclusive Beauty Club or Skin Store. Those are authorized online retailers. You just want to avoid places like Amazon and anywhere that's not authorized because they can sell counterfeit product. But if you're looking for something you can grab off the shelf when you're at Target, Vichy makes one, Neutrogena. Sometimes the ones at the drugstore aren't as cosmetically elegant because one of the issues with the mineral sunscreens is they can sometimes leave a white cast because of the minerals, where some of the other more elegant formulations from these quote-unquote medical grade skincare companies might be a little bit easier to rub in and maybe look a little bit more appealing.
That's really great advice too about Amazon, because I feel like that's probably the number one place that everyone goes to search for something nowadays.
Yeah, and myself included, but unfortunately, a lot of times the products can be counterfeit or expired. So when you're talking about skincare, you definitely want to make sure you're buying from an authorized retailer.
That's great advice. And we'll link some of these brands in our show notes so that our listeners can have easy access to them. All right, so let's move on to anti-aging screens and products, because as the average age of first pregnancy increases, I find that women are using these anti-aging creams and products more and more before and sometimes during pregnancy. And so are there any anti-aging ingredients or products that you would avoid using?
Yes, absolutely. So if you are actively trying to conceive, you want to make sure you're not using anything in the vitamin A family. So that's retinoids, which could be prescription from your doctor, tretinoin, tazarotene, also adapalene, retinol. Those are ones that are found over the counter. So you want to make sure you're not using any of those if you're actively trying to become pregnant. Also hydroquinone, high doses of salicylic acid, which are sometimes, I mean, that's not such an anti-aging ingredient as it is more acne, glycolic acid in very high formulations. You want to make sure anytime you're seeing your dermatology provider or facialist for a facial or procedure that you're telling them that you're actively trying to conceive. You'll definitely have to avoid like chemical peels, things like that, because of the higher concentrations of acids that are used in those.
That's great to know, because some of the ingredients in these products, as you mentioned, if you go to an esthetician or a provider to have some of these procedures done, I feel like as a consumer, we typically have no idea what's being put on our face. and I think that's a really great point that you should mention, like, you know, make a point of mentioning that you're trying to conceive when you're going to get these procedures, because it doesn't mean that you can't have the procedure necessarily, but they may choose to use some alternative solutions if they know that there's, you know, a chance that you may be pregnant in the near future or currently.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, as a rule of thumb, any kind of injectable procedure like your Botox or filler really needs to wait until after you're done breastfeeding.
That's great to know. So moving on to at-home skincare, or continuing on with it as some of the solutions that you talked about can be used at home, are there any skincare products or ingredients in products that people use at home? So I'm just thinking like toners or facial oils or serums or anything like that that might pose a threat either to fertility itself or to like the health of a early pregnancy.
Yeah. So again, if you are actively trying to conceive, as a rule of thumb, I would stop these things probably a month before you, you know, are going to try. anything with high doses of salicylic like acid over 2%. So most of the time what's in your cleanser is a lower dose. And if you're someone who suffers from acne and, you know, you have a 2% salicylic acid cleanser, it's probably fine. Definitely double check with your dermatologist and your OBGYN. But for the most part, under 2% is acceptable. And retinoids, those are really commonly used at home anti-aging products. So make sure and look at all of your creams and your anti-aging serums and all of those things, because sometimes retinol is included within those, or peel pads, things like that. Sometimes they'll have a small amount of over-the-counter retinol within that cream, even if it's not advertised on the front of the bottle. So it's really important that you're turning that bottle around and making sure you're reading through the ingredients. Also, hydroquinone is something you want to avoid. That's often found in lightening creams, although less commonly now because we have some other really awesome lightening ingredients that we can use. And also arbutin, which is actually a precursor to hydroquinone. That's something you're going to want to stop using if you're actively trying to get pregnant.
Excellent. And I think that sometimes it can be really difficult to differentiate which products have, as you mentioned, some of these ingredients in them, because they're not always advertised per se as having, you know, like a retinol or something. And so as someone who's worked in OBGYN, I often would have people bring me their skincare products. And sometimes I was not familiar with all of the ingredients in there. And so, you know, I'd recommend if they were seeing a dermatologist to speak with them. But I think it just brings up that same point of like, don't be shy to mention that you're planning a pregnancy with your providers, right? Like, it's so important for every provider that you see when you're in that period of considering pregnancy or actively trying to conceive to know about it. And I feel like as a society, we often keep that to ourselves until we're actually pregnant. But when we think about all of the important development that happens to a fetus in the first 4, 6, 8 weeks of development, often before women even know they're pregnant, it really emphasizes the importance of letting people know when you're trying to conceive, because the last thing you want to do is, you know, find out that you've been using a product that could potentially be harmful, you know, when you're 8 or 12 weeks along in pregnancy.
Yes, absolutely. That's such a great point. And I think that, you know, this period of time where you're prepping your body and you're planning to become pregnant is really, it's really a luxury that you have that time, because as you know, so many pregnancies in the United States are unplanned. So if you have the luxury of time and planning, you really should use it properly. And like you said, make sure that you're mentioning it to your providers. It's even a good idea to make an appointment with your dermatology provider beforehand and just say, hey, you know, next month when I ovulate, I'm going to be trying to conceive. What changes do I need to make to my regimen?
That's a great point. And I think that's great advice. A preconception dermatology visit. I always advocate having a preconception visit with your primary doctor or your OBGYN provider. But I also always tell people, don't leave out your other providers. You know, if you see a dermatologist, if you see an endocrinologist, like certainly have preconception visits with them too, because everyone has different areas of expertise. And you know, a lot of the time your primary care provider or your OBGYN may not have any idea that you're seeing these other providers and doing these outside services. And so I always think it's really ideal to speak with the people who are providing you whatever care that is, in this case, skincare, and just loop them into it. Because as you mentioned, like you guys know which ingredients should be avoided, and you can guide women into, you know, that planning. Like, okay, if you're going to start trying in 3 months, then, you know, maybe this product is safe to use up until that month before, like you mentioned.
Yes, exactly. For the most part, you know, I have these conversations with my female patients who are of childbearing age, just because I know that so many of them are probably planning pregnancies. So I do have that conversation just to ask, when I'm putting them on, especially a topical prescription, you know, do you have any plans to try to conceive in the next few months? And if they say yes, but not right now, then I can kind of guide them. Okay, exactly like you said, 1 month before, you need to stop this, and this.
That's awesome. And I'm so happy to hear that you have those conversations, because I do feel like that's often missing from the visit in a lot of cases.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, as you know, in healthcare, we are all so busy and crunched for time that those questions aren't always asked. Luckily, we have a really good system at my practice and a very good team. And, you know, a lot of those questions are built into the kind of pre-visit that the medical assistant has with the patient before I come into the room. Trying to conceive is not one of them, but, you know, we're always asking our patients if they're breastfeeding or pregnant, because there are quite a few things that we avoid doing on patients who are in that situation.
Definitely. Well, maybe you guys will have to add trying to conceive to your to your list now.
Yeah, that's actually a great idea.
All right, so let's move on to facials. So this is a topic that I feel like is all over the media today, at-home facials, facials at, you know, dermatology offices or with estheticians, and just facials everywhere. And so I'm wondering, are there any masks or facials, whether they are at-home masks or maybe like facials in an office, that you would recommend for someone? Like maybe there's something supportive for a woman who is trying to conceive or is in early pregnancy, or anything that she should avoid during this time?
Yes. So the same ingredients hold true for if you're doing an at-home mask or an at-home facial or in office. And that's where you really want to pay attention in those products, because usually those products that are intended for once a week use have higher concentrations of certain ingredients. So again, salicylic acid, you want to keep under 2%. Glycolic acid, you want to keep under 10%. You want to avoid retinoids, hydroquinone. And again, all of those are commonly found in these once a week use products and often used in facials, especially like a salicylic acid or glycolic acid. Now they have options that they can use that are safe for someone who's trying to conceive. So again, just make sure you're telling your facialist when you're there that you are trying to conceive. And you know, there's nothing wrong with just a gentle facial where we're using super gentle products and, you know, they're just doing some extractions and things like that. You'll still get that amazing facial experience, you know, the nice facial massage, all those amazing things that we go to our esthetician for. You'll still be able to get the benefit of that, and she'll be able to better pick the products for you.
So the good news is it sounds like we do not have to avoid facials completely in this time frame. Is that right?
Right, exactly. As long as you're going to a licensed esthetician, preferably one who's been trained by a dermatologist who works in a dermatology office, they're certainly equipped to make those decisions and help you out.
Yeah, and that's a great point about training. I personally, even as a healthcare provider, find it very confusing sometimes the different people who can provide some of these skincare services in office. And so that's a really great point about finding someone who's licensed, ideally trained by a more experienced provider, as you mentioned, like a dermatologist. That's a really great point, because I find it to be really confusing. And I don't know that everyone's necessarily upfront about their credentials when it comes to things like that.
Yeah, I agree with you completely, especially now. This is something that we're seeing in the cosmetic dermatology world. Providers who are, I shouldn't say providers, but estheticians who might not even be a licensed esthetician, or medical assistants who are working on their own and actually injecting and doing procedures that it's absolutely illegal for them to do. So if you're seeking care for any of these things at a dermatology clinic, it's obviously much more likely that you're going to be in the hands of someone who's been properly trained and who is properly credentialed.
And as someone who works in dermatology, are there certain licenses or certificates that people should ask for or look for when they're choosing their providers?
Yes. So if you're seeing someone for, you know, a full skin evaluation on the cosmetic side, it's really a good idea to see, you know, a dermatology PA or a dermatology nurse practitioner. If you're not having any issues at all, your skin is beautiful, and you just want to have an occasional facial, then a licensed medical esthetician is great. But again, if you're experiencing, you know, acne or eczema or rosacea or melasma, it's a good idea to at least see a nurse practitioner, PA, or a dermatologist at least one time in the beginning to get on a proper regimen. And then after that, you could maybe potentially do your follow-ups with your esthetician, depending on, you know, if they're in the same building and there's good cooperation between the providers.
That's excellent advice. Thank you. I think that will be really helpful for people as they're choosing not only what kind of skincare to get, but also where to go for their skincare.
Yes. And especially when we're talking about the preconception period, or if you're already pregnant, definitely, you know, go see a licensed medical provider first, because they're really equipped to kind of weed through your products and know what's safe and what isn't.
That's awesome. So we want someone just like you when we're going to the office.
Well, if you're in Miami, you can come see me.
So let's talk a little bit more about in-office procedures. You had mentioned Botox briefly earlier. So I'm just thinking of some of the most common ones that I see women of reproductive age doing, which is Botox, fillers, some of the laser therapies that you do in the office. Are any of these procedures safe to do in the preconception period, or, you know, if you're potentially in early pregnancy? Or would you say that they all kind of need to be avoided at that point?
Yes, if you are actively trying to conceive, you want to avoid these completely. If you are pre-ovulation, the laser is fine. And really, most people would agree that if you're pre-ovulation, the Botox and filler is fine. It's kind of my rule of thumb that I'd like to see you a full month before you're going to try to conceive, just out of precaution. But lasers, that can be done pre-ovulation if you're trying to get pregnant that cycle. And really, at pretty much most of the in-office procedures need to be avoided while you're pregnant. It's just not worth the risk. As you know, in this country, the research that we have on pregnant women is very almost non-existent because, of course, no one wants to take the risk of doing a procedure for research purposes on a pregnant patient. So we don't have a lot of data, and the risk just simply is not worth it.
That's a really good point. And in our last podcast, we spoke about certain medications and their effects in pregnancy. And we talked about that exact same principle that we sometimes don't have really great data on some of these medications and ingredients. And a lot of the data that we do have comes from observational studies, which means that, you know, women who happen to be pregnant while they were using these products are followed and we kind of just see what happened. And as you mentioned, nobody really wants to be that person, but obviously there are some scenarios where exposures happen, even if they don't mean to happen. And so I agree that I think avoiding things in general when they're not necessary, especially cosmetic procedures like Botox and fillers that are not necessarily done for a medical purpose, you kind of err on that side of caution like we spoke about earlier.
Yes, absolutely. And I also like to bring up it, to my patients who come in and find out they're pregnant and are totally freaked out that they've been on like a retinol. I'm like, no, you know, there's such minimal absorption of these products, but it's not something that you should panic. If you do find out that you're pregnant and you've been on some of these ingredients, please don't panic. It's going to be okay. But it's, if you have the opportunity to plan ahead, like I mentioned, it's best to just avoid them.
Now, when we talk about things like Botox and fillers, those last for, you know, several months, maybe even up to a year in some cases with fillers. Do you think that people should avoid it so that it's like avoid it in the preconception period so that it's out of their system by the time they become pregnant? Or is it less the ingredients and more the actual injection of them that we're concerned about during pregnancy?
So as long as you're a full month before, I wouldn't worry at all. Botox, you know, it's not like it's circulating in your bloodstream or anything like that. It actually breaks a protein and it lasts for 3 to 4 months because that's how long it takes your body to remake that protein that's needed for muscle contraction. So it's not like these things are circulating in your system. It's just, if you could avoid it for 1 month prior, that's plenty.
Okay, that's great to know. All right, so what about some of the lasers that we kind of touched on earlier? Can you talk about the different types of lasers, I guess, that are available and what the negative effects might be of those, if any?
Yes. So in the preconception period, like I said, lasers are perfectly safe. There's a few different types. There's vascular lasers, which target things that are red. So any sort of broken blood vessel or rosacea, red scarring, things like that. There's laser hair removal, of course, as you know. But, if you're planning to become pregnant, your hormones are going to change your hair growth quite a bit during that time. So it's probably best to just wait until after to start any laser hair removal. If you're in the middle of a treatment, that's fine. Continue until you conceive. And there's some ablative lasers. Of course, we want to avoid those, obviously, because of the risk of infection. But really, lasers in general, we avoid in pregnancy completely.
All right, great to know. And what about things like microdermabrasion? Like, I feel like that's a really common procedure nowadays.
Yeah, again, anything that's going to cause any micro tears in the skin, I would avoid. Probably you're going to find tons of dermatologists who are comfortable doing it. I come from a practice that is extremely cautious. So we do a lot of the trials for the FDA at my clinic. So as you can imagine, because of those parameters, we are such rule followers. We are very risk averse practice. But in general, I'm not really a fan of microdermabrasion for anyone because it does cause some underlying inflammation and can end up doing more harm than good. There are definitely some better options out there.
Are there any options that you would recommend that would be safe during, like when you're trying to conceive or during pregnancy?
Like I said, as long as you're pre-ovulation, lasers are fine. During, as far as treatments that you can get in the office, Your options are really limited. It's really limited to facials, and you can use the LED light that the medical estheticians use. It's used to kill bacteria on the skin and things like that. That is okay to use during pregnancy if you're getting it from a medical esthetician. But as far as the procedures that you would do with your nurse practitioner or your PA, as far as the way that I practice, your options are pretty limited. We're just going to keep it to making sure that you're on a great skincare routine, and we're preventing things like melasma, preventing things like stretch marks, which there isn't a whole lot you can do to prevent stretch marks. It's pretty much genetic. But just making sure that you're on a good regimen for your concerns so that we're preventing them and we have a plan in place should they arise after you've given birth.
That's a really great point that you bring up about some of the skincare issues that may occur during pregnancy, like melasma or stretch marks, and actually having a conversation about those before you become pregnant so that you're not caught off guard and you feel like you are kind of armed with some information about what, if anything, you can do. That's a great point. And I think that really speaks to the importance of notifying and informing your dermatologist that you're having or that you're considering conceiving or that you're actively trying to conceive so that you can have those conversations so that it's not so, I don't want to say traumatic, but you know, I feel like people, these things happen during pregnancy and they're like, what is happening to my face? You know?
Absolutely. And as far as melasma is concerned, it is so much easier to prevent it than it is to treat it. And if you, you know, you're one of the unlucky ones, which is very, very common in pregnancy, some of the stronger ingredients and medications that we use to treat melasma can't be used during pregnancy. So it's super, super important that you're preventing it as much as possible.
That's great to know. All right. So you mentioned that kind of in general, women should avoid some of these procedures and topical creams and whatnot as like a rule of thumb about a month before they start trying to conceive, or at the very least, once they're in that post-ovulation period. Is that right?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. And I think the differentiation of ovulation is really important. And, you know, of course, not everyone always knows when they're ovulating, and that's totally fine. But if you're someone who's tracking your cycles, if you're someone who has pretty regular cycles and you can kind of estimate when you would be ovulating, that's such a good point about ovulation and the timing of these procedures. Because if you're pre-ovulation, of course, the risk of you being pregnant and not knowing about it is pretty small. But once you've ovulated, and especially if you're trying to conceive actively, you could be pregnant for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks sometimes and not realize that you're pregnant at all, but you still, you know, are developing a very small baby at that point. So there's really important growth happens during that time, both neurologically and whatnot. And so I love that you brought that up. If you're, you know, in that pre-ovulation period, then you're able to, you know, safely continue with some of these procedures versus if you're post-ovulation.
Yes, exactly. And as you said, not everybody knows that. But I think nowadays with all the technology that we have, I mean, I have like two apps on my phone that tell me when I'm going to get my period. So, and like you mentioned, if you're pretty regular and you've been tracking for some time, and you know, they obviously, you know more about this than I do, but there are ovulation testing kits and things like that. And if you've been doing that for months and months, often you'll find that you can kind of have a very good idea of what's going on in your body. So I think a lot of people probably listening to this podcast are in that boat.
Totally, totally. All right. So are there any skin products that you can think of that would be supportive for women in the trying to conceive period? I know you had mentioned that there are ways to prevent melasma, or that it's better to prevent melasma if you can.
Yes, absolutely. So vitamin C is a really great ingredient that really everyone should be using if your skin isn't too sensitive. And this is going to really help us protect our skin from UV damage and things like that. It's one of our best defenses, aside from sunscreen, from melasma, if we can't use some of the other supporting ingredients like retinoids, which we cannot. And then number two, as I mentioned, a mineral sunscreen every single day is super, super important, not preventing melasma. And it's so important to prevent rather than treat, like I said, because a lot of those ingredients we're not going to be able to use until after you've done even breastfeeding. And, you know, even then it's a hard skin condition to treat. You know, make sure you're on a good moisturizer, and you can keep using your low doses of glycolic acid and salicylic acid. That's perfectly fine.
That's a great point about also like avoiding some of these products during, of course, pregnancy, and then also while you're breastfeeding. And I think that really speaks to the importance of getting a good regimen during this preconception period, because that is something that you can probably continue then maybe for a couple of years when you add in the time that you are trying to conceive, which can be up to a year normally for most women, when you add in the time of pregnancy, which is, you know, 9 to 10 months. And then when you add in breastfeeding, which if you're following current recommendations can be 1 to 2 years, we're talking about like a 3 or 4 year time frame potentially, where you'll be avoiding some of those other products that we spoke about.
Yes, exactly. So the longer that you're on a good regimen, you're really setting yourself up for success during those 2 or 3 years. As you know, if you've ever had a baby, I have not, but this is like the most common complaint when my patients come in. They're just like, I don't even feel like myself anymore. I don't recognize myself when I look in the mirror. And of course, a lot of that is emotional, but some of it is true. Our face changes a lot and our skin changes a lot. So if you can get yourself on a really good regimen beforehand, you're really, really setting yourself up for success. And that's why, you know, if you're already on a cleanser with a little bit of glycolic acid, things like that, they're not going to be as powerful as if you were using a retinoid every night, but they do have some, you know, collagen supporting properties and things like that that are important if a good regimen is something that's important to you.
Yeah. And also some women, not everyone, but some women do find that they have worsening of skin conditions during pregnancy. So acne is a big one that in some cases gets worse, especially if it's hormonal acne. And so I also think that when you've kind of set yourself up for success before pregnancy, you're probably also preventing some of these flare-ups, if you will, that occur during pregnancy.
Yes, absolutely. I agree. And hormonal acne is something that we see a lot very often. As you know, some women really do have that pregnancy low. And unfortunately, sometimes it really wreaks havoc on the skin. And that's another really good point. If you are having a flare of rosacea or acne or eczema or something like that during pregnancy, there are plenty of options. So there are things that we can do with your regimen if something like that happens that are safe for you. So don't avoid going to your provider just because you think, oh, well, I can't use any of that stuff anyways. Because we do have options.
That's great to know. So everyone can feel confident that there's something we can do to help.
Yes, absolutely.
All right. So as we get towards the end of the podcast here, do you have any go-to skincare products or brands? I know you had spoke about mineral sunscreen and some of your favorite brands of that. Some of the other products that are preconception friendly. Do you have any recommendations that women could, you know, feel comfortable using themselves?
Sure. So I'm pretty brand agnostic, which means I'm not really loyal to any one brand. A lot of times brands will come out with like a really hero product, I always like to give the example of SkinCeutical CE Ferulic. It's a really incredible product. It's been clinically studied. It's a favorite in the dermatology world. And then, you know, they'll build a line around it. And SkinCeuticals has many amazing products, but I never recommend that someone just blindly picks a brand and buys everything in it. Instead, really, you know, looking for the hero products from each brand is kind of how I like to build a regimen. So I would say as far as just some basics, like I said, vitamin C is super important. I'm a big fan of the Revision Skincare C Plus Correcting, and it's a THD ascorbate analog of vitamin C. So if you're someone who has had trouble tolerating vitamin C in the past, that can happen with L-ascorbic acid. So you can look for some of these serums that have the analogs. They're lipid soluble, which means oftentimes the pH doesn't have to be as low in the product and it won't be as irritating for you. As I mentioned, a good mineral sunscreen is key. There are some great products that have lower doses of glycolic acid, which is really a great ingredient to kind of have some changes to your skin that are noticeable. So if you're someone who's kind of discouraged with your skin and how it's looking, it might not be a bad idea to add in a lower concentration of glycolic acid just to kind of smooth out the texture and tone of the skin. Topics, or I think the brand is called Glycolics, makes a really good one. Another good thing to note during pregnancy or even beforehand, if you're someone who has had, you know, that you're prone to stretch marks if you've had them with a previous pregnancy, or if you just want to kind of be on top of it and prevent them, you can use a little low concentration glycolic acid scrub on the areas that you know that you'll be prone to getting them. And just making sure that you're really keeping the area super moisturized. It's really hard to prevent them if you're genetically prone to them, but those are a couple things that you can do. Some stretch mark products, believe it or not, have retinoids in them. Even if it's, you know, a really low concentration. So make sure you're reading the back As I said, I'm very risk averse, so I would recommend avoiding any sort of belly oil that has retinoids in them. You can use kind of, you know, there's tons of brands out there, but even like an all natural, like an almond oil is actually shown to have some benefits at preventing stretch marks. So just something to keep in mind when you're, I guess, a little bit further along in the process. But those are kind of the main things that you should look out for.
That's great. And I love what you spoke about as it relates to vitamin C. I didn't realize that there were different versions that have like analogs or not, because correct me if I'm wrong, but in some cases, vitamin C can make acne worse. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. If you have sensitive skin, it can certainly cause a flare. I personally can't use any L-ascorbic acid. Like I said, it's a fantastic ingredient. It's been heavily researched, but some people just can't tolerate it. It will, you know, flare my rosacea or my acne. So I have to use one of the lipid-soluble analogs.
Love that. That's such great information. All these little dermatology secrets that that the general public doesn't know. Well, now they will, but
absolutely.
All right. Well, Amy, I have so enjoyed having you on the podcast. It's so obvious how informed you are when it comes to skincare. I love that you reference data and studies and research and that you're involved in that, because I just think this world can be really confusing for a lot of women. Even, like I said, people like myself who have a healthcare background. If you're not in the field of dermatology, it's something that can be like this confusing area of a bunch of grays. Like there's all these like ifs, ands, and I just find it to be really confusing. And I imagine that people without a medical background would probably find it even more so. And so I love that you have, you know, really great recommendations that are based on, you know, any evidence that's available at least. So is there anything else that you would like to share with our audience before you leave?
Yeah, I guess, you know, what I would mention, and this is something that I mentioned to my patients, is this is a temporary time. And I think because of so many of the hormonal changes, and it's such an emotional time, as I mentioned, I often have people in my office who are just so discouraged with their skin for whatever reason it may be, but just know that it's temporary and there are things that we can do to help you out. Just don't let it stress you out. That is the last thing you need right now when you're either trying to get pregnant or you are pregnant. Just know that when, you know, come see us if there's an issue, and know that the rest can be handled when you're done breastfeeding, and just try not to stress out about it because it's just not worth it.
That's great closing. I think keeping your eye on the prize, which in this case is usually a healthy baby and a healthy mom, is really important. And I think in the scheme of things, you know, some of these smaller things can be let go of. Not everyone needs to have their Botox all the time, right?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Everyone who's listening to this is beautiful just as you are. But if there's something that's bothering you, that people like Amy are there to help.
Absolutely. I agree.
Well, thank you so much. Can you tell our listeners how they can find you?
Sure. So my blog is theskinthusiastblog.com. And I'm also obviously on Instagram at @_skinthusiast. And recently, I'm also on TikTok at the same handle.
Ooh, I love it. So everyone go over to Instagram and TikTok and follow Amy and learn about all of the fun things that you can do for your skin, whether you're trying to conceive or not right now.
Yes, exactly. There's lots of tidbits in there.
I love that. Well, Amy, thank you again so much for joining us on the podcast. I think that a lot of women will really relate with this information and find it super useful. And we just really appreciate you taking the time to share your knowledge with us and our audience.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
The information provided in the Preconception podcast is for educational purposes only and should not be interpreted as medical advice. Please speak with your healthcare provider to learn more about your health before pregnancy.